This is David Old for Stand Firm. It is Tuesday the 20th. It's Tuesday or Monday? It's Tuesday, isn't it? It's Tuesday. It's Tuesday. Tuesday the 22nd of October. It is day two of GAFCON. It's Nigerian Day. We've just had a great Holy Communion service according to the Nigerian prayer book. And I am now sitting here in a much emptier All Saints Cathedral in Nairobi with the Reverend... now, let me get this right. The Reverend Doctor... John W. Yates III.
That is correct.
So there's more than one of you, is that right?
There are three of us living.
Three of you, your father and grandfather?
My father and my six-year-old son.
Now, this is not the first time we've met, is it?
No.
No, we first met at All Souls Langham Place, and that was around the turn of the millennium, wasn't it? John, why don't you tell our viewers, there's nobody watching this, what you were doing in London.
I moved to London in 1996, yeah. Having just finished university for the Brits, college for the Americans. And I came to work as John Stott's study assistant.
Wow.
And spent 3 years working for John in London.
Now, how did that happen? How does a man get invited to be John Stott's study assistant? Because I would imagine if you put that job out on the market, you would be inundated with applications.
I think the short answer is nepotism.
Nepotism.
Yes. My father's a minister, and I grew up regularly being kicked out of my bedroom when John Stott would come to visit speak at the church, and had been around him on a number of occasions, and he needed a new study assistant, and the gentleman in the States, David Spence, who was helping him find study assistants, said, well, young Yates is finishing college, what about him? Uncle John said, that sounds good. And it went from there.
Fantastic. And so you spent a few years with us at All Souls Langham Place in London?
I did. I spent 3 years working for Uncle John and really on staff at All Souls.
Yep.
And then I spent another year in London studying.
Doing a master's degree?
I did. I did a master's degree at King's College.
And then after that?
After that, I went on. I spent a long time in school.
Yeah.
Got married, and yep. My wife Alicia and I went to seminary at Trinity in Ambridge.
Yep.
And then we went back to England to do a PhD in New Testament at Cambridge.
And what was your thesis, John?
Oh, boy. I wrote on Paul's understanding of the Holy Spirit, specifically his description of the Spirit as life-giving.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay. So, now, you are currently the rector at a church in Raleigh. I would call it Raleigh.
Yes.
Raleigh. For our people that don't know it, where's Raleigh? What's the name of the church?
Raleigh is the capital of North Carolina, and our church is called Holy Trinity. And it's an Anglican church. It's 9 years old, and it meets in a prep school chapel. And we are just a couple months away from breaking ground on building the first new church building in downtown Raleigh in almost a century.
Now, if it's 9 years old, then it must be one of the beautiful outcomes of the Anglican Wars. Is that right?
It is. Holy Trinity began in a living room with six couples praying for renewal in the Episcopal Church. And a year after that prayer gathering began, they incorporated as a church with a chaplain assisting, and then a year after that hired their first clergy.
That's exciting. And where in the ACNA then do you guys find yourself? Are you in a diocese?
We're part of the Diocese of the Carolinas, which is just over a year old.
Okay.
And it's about 20 churches in North and South Carolina.
That's exciting. So, that's exciting. Now, as good as all that stuff is, what I really wanted to talk to you about was the thing that you can give a unique view on, which is John, or Uncle John, as we all call them at All
Souls.
That's
right.
Uncle John, who sadly passed away, and his influence on particularly the Anglican Church in North America. Mm-hmm. I'd be really interested to hear your thoughts on that. What influences has Uncle John had on the Anglican Church in North America? Mm-hmm. What is it today that it might not be had Uncle John not done the profound amount of work that he did?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I tend to think more of Uncle John's influence globally, and of course being here in Kenya at the GAFCON gathering, I've been thinking of him a lot. But in North America specifically, I think there's several ways in which he influenced the evangelical movement there. One was that he influenced evangelicalism. His influence spread far more broadly than simply within Episcopal or Anglican circles. And I think I would classify his influence in two categories. One that was that he made he was a compelling example of a rigorously intellectual faith that was still intensely real and personal. And in that way, he militated against some of the anti-intellectualism of the fundamentalist movement in North America. And so he, along with a number of others, in the latter half of the 20th century, made it okay to be an intellectual evangelical mm-hmm. Christian. He modeled that in his speaking, in his preaching, in his writing. So that was a huge, I think, a huge blessing to the church in North America, helping pull it out of its sort of mid-century fundamentalism. A second gift, I think, that he gives to the church in North America is the gift of a global perspective. So John came and spoke at the Urbana conferences in yeah. Illinois for decades, and did the Bible teachings. And
those are the InterVarsity.
That's right, the InterVarsity Fellowship.
I got my first Bible that I read as a Christian man from one of those conferences.
No.
Yeah, I did. Anyway, your interview, not mine.
I unfortunately never managed to attend one.
Yeah.
But John had an impact on American university students by helping them see the world around us. You know, each nation can be very insular, especially North Americans. Well, I won't include Canadians in that. I'll leave them to themselves. But folks in the States can be very inwardly focused. And to have John Stott come in and preach and teach a bold and bright faith with a deep awareness of what's going on in the rest of the world was really significant.
So he's intellectually rigorous, and he legitimized that,
mm-hmm.
and then he brought you guys a global awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And now if I can ask, and maybe you might not be able to say, but what did you learn personally from working with a man like that for 3 years? I mean, that must have been incredible. What was he like?
It was a great experience. And I think the best way to sum up my experience is actually to tell you about my very first day of work. John's bedroom was my office. And he lived in a very small three-story, stacked on top of itself flat in
yeah.
central London. And Francis Whitehead, his secretary, had the ground floor office. His bedroom was on the first floor. And there was a desk that was mine during the day, except for nap time when I got kicked out. And John's study was on the top floor. My first day of work, I came in, and Francis directed me to my desk. John was already upstairs, had been at work for 3 or 4 hours.
What time of day was it?
Well, I probably got there about 9, and John had been at his desk
for 3 or 4 hours.
Since 5:30.
Yeah, yeah.
And on my desk was a stack of handwritten pages. And on top was a yellow post-it note that just said JY, which is what I was called. That Francis Whitehead gave me that name the day before when I arrived in the country. It said, "Dear JY, attached is a short interview for a book to be published in America on singleness. Would you mind commenting and letting me know what you think?" So being 22... and an American, I took him seriously, and I carefully read this interview, and I jotted down notes, and I gave him about 6 different suggestions, everything from this word, we don't use this word in America, to would you think about adding a paragraph about this, to I don't quite understand what you mean here, and went on to do other work that day, and left and handed that to him at tea time in the afternoon, which is our time to catch up. The next morning, I come back to work, my second day of work, and I go up to my desk, and there is a stack of paper, little post-it note on top, that says, "JY, what do you think now?" It was the interview, and he had gone in and made every single change that I suggested.
That's terrifying, isn't it?
It was terrifying. And that was the exact response I had. I sat there and I thought, oh no, he's going to listen to me. And from that day on, I took my job.
Just think the danger we could all have been in at that moment, John.
From that day on, I took my job with great seriousness.
Because of the havoc you could have wreaked.
Because I knew that he would listen to me. But what that taught me was the quality that everyone who knew John well or saw him in action would bring to the fore, which was the quality of humility.
Great humility, yeah.
And that, of all the qualities that he had, that was the one that stood out the most.
Wow,
and
wow.
Had a most profound impact on me.
Must have been very hard to leave. Now, John, you said earlier that that John Stoddard brought an international perspective to North Americans, mm-hmm. and we're certainly seeing that now at GAFCON. We're mm-hmm. sitting in the middle of what is a very African, but also very international event. What are your first impressions of GAFCON in these first opening days, and what are you looking forward to as we continue?
Man, that's a tough question.
Yeah, tough. They're just.
We've had a great time so far. It's been a joy to be here together and to be in fellowship and to worship together. And it's been a joy to be in a very African context. We're not just in East Africa, but the gathering is heavily African.
It's great, isn't it?
And it's a happy reflection of the global church. And that's coming from North America. It's just refreshing to be a part of that.
Yeah,
I think I'm looking forward to sort of the slow, steady work of building relationships. Mm. I think that GAFCON will have a significant impact in terms of the content of the teaching and the worship together. I think the long-term impact on the global church will be through the relationships formed and forged over coffee, over dinner at hotels, over sidebar conversations between plenary sessions. Mm. I think that for me is where the real worth and weight will come, because that's how partnerships will develop that will last for the decades to come.
Do you have any particular roles here at the conference? Anything you're doing in particular?
I do. I'm giving one of the Bible teachings. We're teaching through the letter of Ephesians. And I'm teaching on Ephesians 4 on Thursday morning.
Oh, nice. What a privilege.
It is a privilege. That's it's great. The last time I was here sitting in this cathedral, John Stott was standing preaching in the pulpit. And so to think that I'll be there in a few days is slightly terrifying.
Yes, certainly. John, thank you very much for your time. I love being with you. I know that we're both loving being here at GAFCON. Greetings to all our North American and worldwide listeners, and we'll have more for you over the coming days. Thanks very much, John.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, John.